Umar Johnson said that he would slap the shit out of Monty Woodgrain. He called him all kinds of names, called him a freckle face, called him a you know, the P word, the F word. He called him all kinds of things. And it's justified. Umar Johnson should slap Monty Woodgrain. This is a person that has did skits about Umar and sketch comedy and all this other different stuff. So I don't want to hear this the minute somebody shows some frustration about the fact that somebody's saying something about them. Then you can't say anything back because I'm the person with all the credentials and I'm the person that's supposed to be at a supposed to be held accountable at a higher level. What about holding Monty Woodgrain accountable for what he has done?
I can't even say it's the white folks who are doing it. There's so many jealous, hating black folks out there that there was one guy, cool ass dude, little short, more faggot ass nigga, excuse my French, went to my school and did a negative video outside of my school, so called poor. Y'all probably know a little freckle faced bitch nigga, came to my school and did a negative ass video out there speaking down on the school. Out of Philly, when I see him, I'm gonna smack the shit out of him. Because I didn't appreciate that. You don't go to somebody's school trying to build a school for the kids, something you ain't never done. Ain't never did shit for black folks constructed, but run his goddamn mouth. And he went and did a video, standing outside my school, did a video talking about, yeah, you need to pay somebody to come pick up the trash. I don't think this school gonna be ready. And it's, I mean, just negative. You know, and these are black folks who are so jealous that a brother is trying to build an institution that none of them are doing it. Because when you look at any of the popular YouTubers, ain't none of them trying to build no institution. Not one of them. I ain't talking about no fucking basement school either. But a real school, they're not trying to do that. You know, but instead of just leaving us alone to do what we need to do, they're trying to hate and distract from the thing.
What are your thoughts on Dr. Umar Johnson?
It's just such a just nonsense. It's really it's just.
Well, I interviewed Umar.
I saw it. I saw there was one clip. I saw what you put on Instagram. My biggest issue with Dr. Umar Johnson is he's preying off of a very real paranoia and very real hurt that black people in America have. Dr. Umar Johnson is capitalizing on that financially. Right, he's seeing that fear, just like Trump sees the fear that these fucking poor white people have in the middle of the country, and he's capitalizing on that, and he's giving rationales as to why your life is that way. And these rationales are not well thought out, right? They're not well thought out at all. But remember, when you want to believe something, you don't ask for statistics, you don't ask for proof, like we were saying earlier, right? When you want to believe, you don't ask for proof. You know, he was on The Breakfast Club talking about how, like,
radio, DJ.
One nation, one station.
This show is sponsored by myoliveleaf.biz, myoliveleaf.biz.
Attention blacks, whites, and whomever. Dr. Umar Johnson stopped by the Judge Joe Brown Show to deflect his haters, address his recent appearance on The Breakfast Club, and give us a few more updates. Here's what he had to say.
Hello? Anybody there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm here, Chuck.
I'm still here as well.
Okay, Valerie, where did Valerie seem to have disappeared?
No, she had
too
much
eggs. She over to talk to Umar.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just talking and I had myself on mute. but yes. I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you Dr. Schoon. I might as well. I call Dr. Randy. Reverend Randy, so I might as well call you Dr. Scott. but we got another doctor in the house, and 215-989-215-989. Welcome, Dr. Umar, to the show. We're going to avoid all the commercials and other pleasantries and just welcome you in and just throw you into the fold. But you're comfortable with that because you know how to handle yourself. How are you doing?
Peace and black power. Greetings to the family. Happy Kwanzaa. Shout out to South Florida. I'm in Sanford speaking tonight. Second night of Kwanzaa. Looking forward to it. How's everybody?
Yeah, bless,
all right.
Bless.
Good to hear from you again, Dr. Umar.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm doing all right, brother.
All this thing.
Judge Joe Brown, how's it going, Elder?
I'm doing all right, Doctor.
Dad, Dad.
All right. Glad to hear that.
And Dr. Umar, Destiny here.
So, Dr. Umar, are you on the line with Curtis Schoon, Dr. Randy Short, and Judge Brown? So just so you know, we got three different voices hanging out in the background. So real quick, would you like to share what you are doing in Sanford? You want to give us a few updates before we jump into the interview?
Sure. This is the occasion of the 10th anniversary of my annual Kwanzaa tour that I started back in 2010. So this is 10 years completing here. I was in Jackson, Mississippi last night, Mega Evers Community Center. Very strong turnout there. Tonight I'm in Sanford, Florida, home of Trayvon Martin. And then I'll be in Detroit, Michigan at the Charles Wright Museum this coming Monday, December the 30th. Just three cities this year. It's normally seven, but I decided to slow it down a little bit more. So that's what we're doing tonight. We have a poet that's going to open up for me at 6, and then I'll probably take the stage around 6:30.
Now, are you going to I couldn't find that interview, so this is possibly a misquote, but are you opening a school up in Detroit, or what was that conversation?
We're looking for a second location for the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey campus in Detroit. So Wilmington, Delaware is still our mother campus until we build an equivalent on the continent back home in Africa. But we do want to get a second school in Detroit because Detroit was one of the original destinations for FDMG. Divine Order put us in Delaware, and we're happy to be there. But I still want a school in Detroit because that is our quote-unquote blackest city in terms of population in the country, and one of our top cities for black consciousness.
But I would say to everyone, support the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy. God willing, we hope to be operational, if not by this summer, definitely by next. Go to drumarjohnson.com. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Umar Johnson, and we're going to change the course of history with this school.
Talk all black right. to me, Dr. Umar, as Vicki right. Dillard says. Right. You know, it's going to be funny. I love when Dr. Umar leaves and I get to look at the reactions of social media because he be having people so up in arms.
That's because most people are not used to a black male with a traditional European education. I have my doctorate, my master's, all of that. Speaking truth to power the way that I do. Normally when you get to my level of education, you become a coon or a Negro. And what's the difference between a coon and a Negro, Envy? The Negro is innocent in his ignorance. The Negro think Jesus is white. The Negro think white people are smarter. It's not his fault. He's been miseducated, Charlemagne. Mm. But the coon is dangerous. The coon knows Jesus wasn't white. The coon knows white people are not superior to blacks, but they will act like they are because they're going to get something for doing so. The coon consciously sells out his people. The Negro does it out of ignorance. I can work with a Negro. Never trust the coon.
One last point. I want him to clear this up. Sure. Atlanta Black Star reported that there was a time that your credentials were under investigation.
Okay, let's talk about that.
What's your response to that? They said you didn't have the proper license to be a psychologist and you could lose your credentials in Pennsylvania.
Okay, I don't hold a psychology license because I never pursued it.
Okay.
Psychology, like any other discipline, once you do your pre-doc intern and you do your dissertation, you get your doctorate, which is what I have. If you want to get licensed, you have to go to work for an additional year, 1,750 hours in Pennsylvania. You're basically working under a licensed psychologist, and then you take your exam and you get your license. I never took the exam. I never did the postdoc hours. Why not? Because I'm a certified school psychologist. That's where I've made my name. That's where most of my work was done. So I made a decision after I got my doctorate that it's really not necessary to pursue my license because my school psychologist certification is what gives me the legal prerogative to go into schools and evaluate children. But the reason they questioned my credential in the first place is, once again, how could he dare talk like that if he really had that paperwork? And the irony of me not having the credentials is you can call the university and find out if I graduated from there. They will tell you that. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing mysterious about this. It's not a secret society. You contact the university and find out. But after being a certified school psychologist for 20 years now, with the thousands of kids that I've saved, There's no black man in America separate from an institution who has saved more black boys from the psychoacademic holocaust, from prison, from miseducation, from psychiatric medication, from special education, from juvenile detention. You can't name one who's done more to save our children than I have. I've educated a whole generation of black parents on how to fight the system. And speaking of that, I'm going to become the president. There's a strong chance I'm going to become the president of the New York City chapter of our organization, the National Independent Black Parent Association, where we're going to train parents and organize them on how to bring change in the schools in seven main areas: NV, special ed, school discipline, school finance, school policy, parent advocacy, homeschooling, and social support. We need that because we don't have enough Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy schools right now. So we got to educate the parents where they are. And if there's anyone watching this who want to host a training in their state, because 2020, I'm going to every state in America, y'all, and I'm going to train the black parents who want to be trained on the art of how to deal with the schools. What is autism? What is a learning disability? What is an evaluation? What is an IEP? And what states can you exempt your child from vaccinations in order to attend public and charter school? What's the difference between public school, charter school, independent school, parochial school? How to write a letter when you disagree with the school? What to do when the teacher tells you you got to put your child on drugs? We're going to educate every parent who wants to be educated in these 50 states this year. So if you're interested, go to drumarjohnson.com, get in contact with me. But the Black Parent Revolution begins now.
All right, Dr. Umar, thank you so much for addressing that. I appreciate you. All right, so let's shift gears to talk about Senator Cory Booker, because you said something very profound during your Breakfast Club interview. So I'm going to play this audio clip, and then we'll talk.
Wake that ass up
in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
The good brother has returned.
Dr. Umar Johnson. Welcome back, brother.
Peace and black power. Glad to be back.
Nothing brought me greater joy than watching Dr. Umar Johnson have his back to Senator Cory Booker. The whole time Senator Cory Booker was in the lobby.
I respect Senator Booker.
Yes.
There's a lot of black politicians who do some very good things. Mm-hmm. My concern with black elected officials, though, mm-hmm. is that most of them are married to the Democratic Party.
Yes.
As is the black community as a whole. And that's a problem mm-hmm. because the Democratic Party is a white racist institution. Mm-hmm. And it is just as racist as the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So if you are married to the Democratic Party, that means you are a part of their agenda. Mm-hmm. You must be a team player. So if the best interests of the black community conflicts with the Democratic Party's agenda, you're obligated as a member of the team to carry out their agenda. And so I'm at a point in my life where I don't vote for black politicians unless they are independent candidates. Because only if you're an independent candidate will you be an independent thinker. And if you're not an independent thinker, I can't give you my vote.
That sounded interesting. Can you share with us what was going on?
We were in the Breakfast Club lobby together for a little bit of time, and we didn't speak to each other. And I don't think it was out of any animosity. It's just that he knows where I stand, and I know where he stands. He wants to be a Barack Obama replacement. He wants to be another Negro that carries out the orders of the white power structure. So there was no need for a conversation. It wasn't an act of disrespect on my part, but at the same time, I didn't want to entertain a conversation with the senator, knowing full well I'm not voting for him. I'm not voting for anyone. And if somebody comes forward that is going to address, as I said on that interview, at least one of the five major challenges that faces black America: miseducation, mass incarceration, gentrification, police genocide, and access to wealth. Those are the five major crucibles that face us as a people. He don't have a plan for that. Kamala Harris, before she dropped out, she didn't have a plan for that. Bernie Sanders don't have a plan for any of those issues. Joe Biden has no plan for any of those five issues. None of the Republican candidates do. So, I mean, I'm a political science major. I done been there, done that. I done studied this thing. You know, so at this point in time, you know, it's really going to need the conversation because, as you know, with science, it's governed by law. And as long as black politicians are funded by white people and as long as they are loyal to the Democratic Party, we're never going to get results for black people.
This next question has sort of a spiritual undertone, only because I am a consummate peacemaker and a God-fearing woman. So I just want to ask you, because I don't believe in chances, do you think that it was just God ordained that the two of you were put in a space, a certain space, and that during that time you could have been afforded an opportunity to possibly speak to his spirit or speak to the man himself. And that was the reason why the two of you happened to be in the same space at the same time?
Possibly. That's definitely one way to look at it. But I would push back just a little. And of course, I have tremendous respect for him as a black man and what he's achieved in his life as a young brother. But he's former mayor of Newark, New Jersey. Senator Booker is former mayor of Newark, New Jersey, one of the most challenging cities in black America. And I can't really lay my hand on anything that I can see that was done significantly to improve the lives of our brothers and sisters in the brick city, okay, that would lead me to believe that he would do something even better or of more importance to the community than he did in Newark. You know, if you don't bring change in the microcosm, why would I expect you to bring change to the macrocosm? And I understand where you're coming from, and I think that what you're saying would hold a lot of relevance if Senator Booker were an independent candidate. That would hold a lot of relevance because as an independent candidate, he will dictate his agenda. But as a member of the Democratic Party, you know, those platforms that candidates develop for their campaign, they don't create those things in isolation. They have funders and they have think tanks and they have, you know, major party influencers and whips who have a lot to do with, you know, what their platform is ultimately going to be when they're run. That campaign is a team sport. It is a team operation. It is not an individual crusade. So had he been an independent, then yes, I think a lot of what you're saying could in fact hold true. But as a member of the Democratic Party vying for the most prestigious office in the country, I would probably argue that less than 25% of what Senator Booker articulates as his political platform in his campaign actually is coming from his own mind. I think a lot of what he'll be running for and running as has been articulated by members of his party and not necessarily himself. I think that's true for everyone, all the way on up and down to Donald Trump. But when you're looking for an independent black political party, we need voices who are unapologetically going to advocate for black people. I mean, you said it best earlier. The black politician is a salesman. They sell things. And like any good salesman, they want to sell you the things you want to hear, but they're never going to tell you about things that's defective with that product that you're going to buy. You're not going to find out what's wrong with that product until after you bought it, just like we didn't find out what was wrong with the Barack Obama administration until after we bought it, when it's too late to do anything about it.
All right, so this is my last question, then I'm going to toss it to the judge, see if he's got anything he'd like to say to you before you go. Is there anything else that you'd like to say as it relates to your recent Breakfast Club interview?
Shout out to the Breakfast Club. I have to say thank you to them because by being on that platform, they have afforded the opportunity for my message, particularly as it relates to helping parents save their children from the psychoacademic holocaust. They've afforded me the opportunity to spread that message further and wider than I have been able to do previously. So I have to thank them for that. I was a little taken aback by the brevity of the interview. I thought we would probably spend a little bit more time. I don't know if Senator Booker's appearance was impromptu or whether it was scheduled, but he actually came in after me. My interview was scheduled for 9. He showed up right around that time, and DJ Envy took him in first, and they interviewed him for about 90 minutes. And then I guess I was left with the leftovers, but I'm not complaining because, again, they don't have to have me on the platform at all. But I got to give a special shout out to Charlemagne the God because he's really the force, or should I say the energy, that is guaranteeing and making sure and introducing to the Breakfast Club the conscious content and the conscious conversations and the conscious personalities. And although a lot of people may take issue with the brother Charlemagne, I have a lot of respect for him because behind the scenes, he's the one making sure that there is some conscious dialogue on the Breakfast Club and not just, you know, the traditional menu of celebrity gossip and celebrity news. So I really have to thank him, because had it not been for him, there would have been no Dr. Umar Johnson, no Claude Anderson, no Minister Farrakhan, no Dick Gregory, who's now an ancestor. Charlemagne is a big reason why that happens. Yes, obviously DJ Envy has to, you know, also approve that, Sister Angela Yee, but Charlemagne is the reason that I was there.
All right, Dr. Umar, again, we are down to our last few minutes of the interview. Judge Joe Brown will be back in a second. I just wanted to ask you, because I see a lot of people are traveling to Ghana and other places abroad, and I just want to know if there was a difference in the living, the lifestyles, the agendas there anywhere else versus America.
Well, traveling around the world, probably one of the biggest things I've learned, which only reinforces my principles as a Pan-Africanist and a Garveyite, and that is that what you see black people suffering from in any one place, we tend to suffer from in every place. It may look a little different, but the basic problems are the same wherever you go. I don't care if you're in Africa. I'll be going to Saudi Arabia next month. Ireland will be coming up, back to London again, back to the Caribbean islands again. But it's amazing, no matter where you go, you see single black mothers raising children alone. No matter where you go, you see black people being raised on white Jesus, still worshiping a white image of their Savior. No matter where you go, you see the mass incarceration and mass unemployment of black men. That is a global phenomenon. And wherever you go in the world, the black economy, even in black countries, is controlled and dominated by non-African people. And that is amazing. There's not a single economy on the face of the earth, no city, no state, no continent, no nation, where black people run their own economics. And those four consistencies are everywhere on the planet, which is why, for me, we really have to begin to evolve our conversation as black people into one that includes some sort of international operational unity, because all of us are fighting the same evil dragon, global white supremacy, but we're all choosing to fight it in isolation. The biggest contradiction of the black struggle in America, the black struggle in Europe, the black struggle in the Caribbean, is that we fight in a way that's isolated from the larger struggle for African continuity and liberation. We will never, ever get free until Africa gets free, because the respect we get is a direct reflection of the respect that Africa gets. No population outside of their native land is afforded more respect than that population inside the native land. Chinese get their respect because of China's respect. Jews get their respect because of Israel's respect. The British get their respect because of England's respect. And black people, no matter how many degrees we have, no matter how much money we've made, no matter how many celebrities we can parade around, we will never get the quality of respect that we feel we're entitled to until we help Africa achieve some of it for herself.
Let me ask a question here. What nation in Africa?
It doesn't matter which one you're speaking of.
Well, okay, let's take Europe. Are you talking about your Russian support, your Ukrainian support? Are you talking about your Czech Republic report, Slovakian support, French support, Swiss support? Well, what are you doing? You see, when we talk about Europe, we do that, but we talk about Africa as though it's a homogenous place. Last I checked, there are 54 different nations in Africa that can claim the African continent as classically defined.
Well, for me,
how do we get into that? How do we deal with that? Because I have some close African friends, and like some American was trying to say, man, I want to come back and say, yeah, but brother, where do you come from? Where do you want to go? So, well, I'm coming back to my roots. Where are your roots? Oh, you say somewhere on the Gold Coast. Now, what religion are you? Well, I'm Christian. Well, what sects or denomination? Answer carefully. Your life may depend on it. See,
I like to respond to that.
Where in there do we fit? See, I got some Africans telling me that what they want from black Americans is this. They say, you're welcome to come back and buy land, but that's not really helping us. We need somebody that understands the high civilization in the world today, which they consider to be the U.S., to come back and tell us how that works so we can get it together, because we've got people with money, but most of the time they're taking bribes off the top or they're in this little elite group where granddaddy did, and, you know, they control some of the resources, but they don't know what to do with it, and they get some dash off of the deal when the Europeans or the Chinese come in. And then we got this big Chinese, half African population, because you've got so many more Chinese men than you have Chinese women. They're coming over here and breeding with native African women. So what are we going to do with all this stuff here? And you come over. See, we want black Americans to be able to bring something to us rather than black Americans looking to us to be their base. We need them to come bring something back, but they don't tend to get into those things to do that. We would like black Americans who are into science, technology, engineering, and math as an alternative to the Europeans and the Chinese. But just a question, I get this thing where over the last 50 years we have gotten away from action and focused on culture, specifically Afrocentric, and I use this model. Native Americans fought the white boys when they were trying to take over the North American continent, but they weren't relating back to their ancestors from the south and west of Mongolia. They were talking about right now, here and now, we tribe of whatever we may happen to be, Apache, Cheyenne, or whatever it may be, we're fighting these white folk with forked tongues. So we get so caught up in we're going back to Africa or we got to recognize Africa that we forget we got a cause right here. And when the white folk get into the cause, they don't get back to national origin. They get to the here and now. You know, the Germans felt close to the English, but they sure were killing each other off in World War II and in World War I. Same thing with the French. You got French men fighting for the French army with German last names and proud Germans fighting with French last names. So do you think, I'm just asking you as a posit, since I keep getting asked this so much, I just gave you the other side of the thing. I'm not taking sides on it at the moment, but what do you think about that kind of situation? And where does it leave us? If that makes a point, I don't know.
All right. And was that the judge?
That's the judge.
All right. Couple of points.
I just got
one.
Asked. I get asked that a lot, so you pay attention
no
to it. How would you address that?
Good question. To go back, the first point. Honorable Marcus Garvey said, "A strong man is strong everywhere." So I want to underscore what I initially said. The respect that people get around the world is a direct reflection of the respect accorded to their national homeland. Chinese get respect because of China. British get respect because of England. I didn't say Europe. I mentioned specific countries. But we as African people receive the respect that we get in the diaspora because none of our countries on the continent, none of them are exactly where they need to be, because Africa is still trapped in a neo-colonialism, enslaved politically and economically to the French, to the British, to the Belgians, to the Americans. That lack of respect due to their lack of sovereignty is automatically reflected upon all of us. So there is no getting free without the mother herself getting free. Now, with that being said, as far as where we specifically come from as individuals on the continent, for me, it's irrelevant. My father did a DNA test, and when he did his DNA test, Nigeria came up as the most likely source of our family's origin. I kind of already knew that because histories that were done on the Bailey family, on Frederick Douglass, my six times great grandmother Betsy, who raised Frederick Douglass, it was already largely believed that we were from the Nigerian area, that we were from Nigeria because she used to fish with her hands. She used to talk to the plants and make them grow. A lot of people thought we were Nigerian in the first place. His DNA test confirmed it, but I've never taken the DNA test. It doesn't matter to me whether I come from Sierra Leone, the Gambia, Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa. It's irrelevant because as African people, we came from nations and kingdoms that constantly transmigrated across the continent. The countries that are there now are largely a European creation. Those boundaries are not ours. Those boundaries belong to the white man. So for me, it wouldn't make a bit of difference of where I come from. I know that I am African, and I know that the blood of many different African ethnicities run through my veins by virtue of what the transatlantic slave trade did to us. So for me, I don't need to know exactly where I'm from. I know I am an African, and that's enough for me. And when I go there, I'm received everywhere I go as if I'm a member of the family. And one thing I like happening in Africa right now, that is happening in Africa right now, is many of our brothers and sisters on the continent are pushing for an Africa without borders. So they're pushing right now for a continent-wide visa so they can go and visit each other across these artificial European imposed boundary lines. And they're also pushing for the right for us in the diaspora to come home and also travel without necessarily needing a visa to do so. So there's a push in Africa to recognize the underlying cultural, spiritual, and historical unity that is at the foundation of being Africa. You're absolutely right. Africa is not a monolithic continent, okay? You have different nations, you have different languages, you have different nationalities, but at the end of the day, African people have way more in common than we do not have in common. Europeans are not monolithic. Yes, you're right. They fight like cats and dogs. The Asians fight like cats and dogs. The Arabs fight like cats and dogs. But guess what? When it comes to keeping black people in their place, there's a ceasefire, a temporary ceasefire that takes place long enough for the Arabs to keep exploiting black folks, a ceasefire long enough for the Europeans to keep on exploiting black folks, a ceasefire that takes place long enough for the Asians to keep on exploiting black folks. So they're no more monolithic than we are, but that doesn't mean we can't work together for the greater good of African people, and we have to be careful of constantly accentuating these differences that exist on the continent to the point that it can give our children a false notion that it will be impossible to unify Africa. I disagree with that. I believe it's very possible to unify Africa, and I think African Americans have a role to play in that.
Okay, guys, we're down to the last three minutes. Dr. Umar, do you have any final points you'd like to make? Because we'll probably have to bring you back.
The other point I would make on the Pan-African operational unity, responding to the judge's point with regard to economics, yes, without question, Africa can benefit from STEM, but I want to be clear about something. Africa's issue is not that they need the knowledge. Some of the top scientists in America, engineers, are African, okay? Immigrant Africans. They don't need us to go teach them. What Africa needs more than anything else is access to some of that $2 trillion that we waste every year. They need us to systematically invest in Africa's move towards the 21st century. That's what Africa needs. They need the investment of black America more than everything else, because you have African scientists, you have African businessmen. They know what needs to be done to fix Africa. We can't go over there like black-skinned white men telling Africa what they need to fix themselves. That's not what this is about. That is an elitist mindset, which would only ruin the relationship that we're trying to build between our brothers and sisters across the pond. What we have to do is go over there, sit down with them and say, okay, how can we invest in you so you can free yourself of the debt that is imposed upon you, the economic slavery that comes from getting a loan from the World Bank, the economic slavery that comes from getting a loan from the International Monetary Fund, and the economic slavery that comes from getting a loan from the UK or France or from the United States, the significant role that American Africans can play in the liberation struggle for Africa is to invest in Africa so she don't have to be exploited by way of loans from the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank.
All right, guys, that wraps up Friday's live broadcast. You're listening to the voice of Valerie Denise Jones. Right now, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, add an audio clip that was mentioned during the show. It is Dr. Umar in Detroit talking about the school that he is scheduled to open or has goals to open. So I'm going to play that now. Also, I'm going to play a snippet from the live show, which introduces how that particular conversation was introduced. Dr. Umar, I've known you now for a few years and always wanted to ask you, as it relates to the boys' rite of passage, is there something that they need to be doing to prepare in the form of a detox to rid themselves of a lot of the Americanized or, I don't know, commercialized rituals that they partake in?
I don't want them to do anything to detox. I'm giving you a little bit of the school's ritual, the program, the initiation, but here's what, I'm going to give you a little taste of this. Before school begins, let's say school begins August the 21st, 2020, hypothetically. We hope it does, okay? So, 2 weeks before August the 21st, we're going to go and kidnap all the boys out of their homes, and we're going to take them out into the woods, and we're going to begin the process of teaching them how to be men. They will receive an initiation and a socialization that will be jump-started way before school even begins. So before we start teaching them, we must first become family with them. Before we start teaching them, we must first instill in them the principles of revolutionary Pan-African nationalism and unapologetically African alpha manhood. So there will be an initiation phase that takes place outside of the city, in nature, where we will begin the rites of passage for every boy who is enrolled at the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey RBG Academy for Pan-African Excellence. And the school itself will be a continuation of that rites of passage, because my whole curriculum and the whole structure of FDMG is designed to be a guide to manhood. And we're going to begin that before the first book even gets opened, by taking those boys out of their natural environment and put them in a real natural environment and begin the process of manhood training. So we're going to do it the way they do it in Africa. When it's time for you to go through your rites of passage, you don't even know when that day comes. You don't even know. One day, the elders of the village, they come, they snatched you, and they begin the process of manhood training. And that's exactly what we're going to do at FDMG.
Peace and love, Black family. It's the Prince of Pan-Africanism, King Kong Consciousness. I'm live and direct, Southfield, Michigan, with my big brother, Carnell. I'm outside of the Academy of Southfield. This is the school that I was trying to purchase. This is the school that is Black-owned, that I was trying to purchase. Why am I here today? Because I want Detroit to know that we haven't given up on you yet. Why am I here today? I want Detroit to know that I haven't given up on you yet. Yes, we have a beautiful school in Wilmington. That is going to be our first school. That is going to be our mother campus. Shout out to the entire Black Wilmington, Delaware community. But Detroit, we have to finish our mission. We had a mission to build a school in Detroit. I want Detroit to be campus number two. Wilmington is campus number one. I want Detroit to be campus number two. Wilmington is campus number one. I want Detroit to be campus number two. And this is the school, Academy of Southfield, okay? Formerly George Washington Carver School. That's right, the George Washington Carver School. Beautiful school, two floors, modern school. It's clean, it don't need no work. Let me say it again, Detroit. This school doesn't need any renovations. It is move-in ready. If we can get possession of this school, we can start school probably this coming fall. We could start school September of 2020. We could start school next year if we get this school. So if you live in Michigan, if you live in Detroit, you do real estate, or you know the brothers who own this school, because I've been, you know, I communicated with them. I met them back in 2017 when I was trying to get this school, when I spent more time in Detroit than any other place on earth trying to get the school. And I was telling them I wanted to put a half a mil down, pay the rest off. They didn't go for it. In their defense, there was a white realtor that I had to deal with. I don't know if the white realtor was communicating to the truth to them or whatever. But let's go on the walk. Let's go on the walk. I want y'all to see. This is supposed to be the school in Detroit. This is supposed to be the school in Detroit. And then they got extra modulars right there. They got all this extra class space. You got the school on the right-hand side. And then you got the modular units on the left-hand side. You feel me? Behind me is extra class space. So you got the school over here, okay? And then you got the modular units over here. You could probably do almost 1,000 students. We got land out here, playground, okay? You see the playground over there? The swings, got a nice yard, nice outdoor yard, all the extra modulars. Look at all this outside space, y'all. Beautiful trees. We got a lot of beautiful trees in Delaware, too. This is supposed to be FDMG Detroit. Now, when I come to the Charles Wright Museum, when I come to the Charles Wright, when I show up at the Charles Wright Museum on Monday, December 30th, I'm hoping one of my Detroit brothers or sisters bring me some good news about this school. All right? When I come to the Charles Wright Museum next Monday, December 30th, I'm hoping one of my Detroit brothers or sisters bring me some good news about the Academy of Southfield. You feel me? Because this is supposed to be FDMG campus number 2 right here. This is supposed to be the second campus, y'all. This is supposed to be the second campus right here. That's why I'm out here today. This is supposed to be the second campus. You feel me? Beautiful school, right? Beautiful school. This is supposed to be the second campus. That's the front doors right there. Academy of Southfield. Detroit, stand up. Detroit, stand up. They won $1 million, but I would like to give them a lease to own. They won $1 million, but I want to give them a lease to own. I'll give you a half a mil. Let's pay off the rest. Let me hit you with a half a mil. I already been inside, brother. I don't need to call the realtor. You wasn't listening. I done already been in here. Pay attention. I done already been in this school several times. The point I'm making is they wanted $1 million up front, and I wanted to do a deal. So I'm asking Detroit. If anybody in Detroit got some connections, you feel me? If you know some people who know some people, this school is black owned. This school is owned by black men. Get in touch with the owners of the Academy of Southfield. 18330 Carver. Wait, let me get the right. The address is 18330 George Washington Drive, South Mill, Southfield, Michigan. If you into the realty business, 18330 Carver Drive, Southfield, Michigan. 18330 Carver Drive, Southfield, Michigan. That's the address. Get on your game. Get on your game. 18330 Carver Drive, Southfield, Michigan. Detroit, what we gonna do? Motown, what we gonna do? Let's get it. Let's get it. What we gonna do? Let's get it. Tonight, Pontiac, 7 North Saginaw Street, your emergence space, 7 o'clock. Jackson, Mississippi on Thursday. Sanford, Florida, rest in peace, Trayvon Martin on Friday. Pahokee, Florida on Saturday, and we're going to close it out at the Charles H. Wright Museum right here in Detroit, Michigan, Monday, December 30th, 3 until 7 Dr. Umar gets on the stage at 6. Donate. $FDMG School, Wilmington. Shout out to Wilmington for accepting me. We're going to build up campus number one. That is the best school. That is the best school. Okay, campus number one, Wilmington. And this is going to be campus number two, Detroit. Campus number three, Atlanta. Campus number four, Chicago. Campus number five, Baltimore. Campus number six, Houston. Campus number seven, LA. Campus number eight, Milwaukee. Campus number nine, Durham, North Carolina. And we just gonna keep on going. You feel me? Donate. FDMG Academy, P.O. Box 9634, Wilmington, Delaware. FDMG Academy, P.O. Box 9634, Wilmington, Delaware. Or bring a donation check to the events. This is King Kong Consciousness. I'm checking out. Black Power.
Today's live broadcast was sponsored by MyOliveLeaf.biz. MyOliveLeaf.biz.
Hey guys, this is Valerie Denise Jones. Happy holidays to you. I wish you nothing except happiness, good health, and prosperity. Please, please, please go out of your way. Don't let nothing get you down, especially not health issues. No health issues like high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetic blood sugar, eczema, none of that. X it all out. And if you need help or got questions concerning any of the issues I just mentioned, please visit myoliveleaf.biz. Again, myoliveleaf.biz. And if you want to talk to somebody, please call 612-567-3263. 612-567-3263. The guys over there at Team Olive Leaf will definitely be happy to assist you. All right, guys, that officially wraps today's segment. I love you to life. Please do not forget to tell a friend who will tell a friend about today's episode. Also, please support the channel, hit the subscribe button, and meet me down in the comment section.